Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana. The Corkscrew carries a full line of wines, beers, and spirits for everyone from the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held every Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. and Saturday from 2 to 6. Information available at 337-7704 or on the web at thecorkscrew.com. Programs on WILL are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Learn about Krannert Center's 2005-2006 performance season with guest artists Taj Mahal, Yo-Yo Ma, and Joshua Redman by visiting KrannertCenter.com or stopping by to pick up a season brochure.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. Chef Tyler Florence is our guest this afternoon. He is the host of two popular cooking programs on cable television's Food Network, Food 911 and Tyler's Ultimate. On Food 911, he helps people struggling in their kitchens bring a great meal to the table. In Tyler's Ultimate, he travels to research the origins of a dish, then returns home to put his touch on it. The author of two cookbooks, Tyler Florence believes in uncomplicated recipes made from readily available ingredients that result in good food. His latest cookbook is Eat This Book, Cooking with Global Fresh Flavors, and it's just out now. Florence and a couple of the recipes from his new book were featured Saturday on NPR's Weekend Edition. NPR's Linda Wertheimer shopped and cooked with Florence in his downtown New York neighborhood on the edge of Chinatown. And you can link to that story from our website, WILL.UIUC.edu. Listeners, I invite your telephone calls for Tyler Florence. I look forward to your questions and comments. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Outside the local dialing area, call toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Tyler Florence, hi.
Hi, Celeste. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
It's so fun to talk with you.
I watch
Food 911 all the time.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Thanks.
In your new cookbook, Eat This Book, you say your dad's a very good cook and your son Miles is your sous chef. And he insisted that a fruit soup be included in the section on desserts called Licking the Plate Clean. Is your family a family of cooks?
Well, you know, my dad was the youngest of eight children growing up in rural Georgia, and my grandmother's full-time job was just to cook for the family. So I grew up with the sense of cooking and sharing food around a large table and having a format to kind of exchange ideas and laugh and enjoy each other's company. So good food is something I grew up with. I learned how to cook basically going to the School of Hot Stoves. I went to Johnson and Wales University in Charleston, South Carolina. I went there for 4 years. I got a culinary degree and a business degree. And as a matter of fact, they gave me an honorary doctorate last spring, which was kind of nice.
Wow.
But then the School of Hot Stoves kicked in when I moved to New York City in 1991, and I started working with some of the best chefs in the world. And I've been in New York City for, God, almost going on 13, 14 years now. And I worked with really some truly amazing people. But my dad's a great cook, and I just come from people of a whole big family of people who really love great cooking.
Yeah. Well, tell us about Miles' strawberry soup.
That's a good recipe. My son, he'll be nine. I can't believe how old he's getting. He'll be nine in June. And two summers ago, when we were actually crafting the recipes for the book, we were on vacation in France, and I would kind of block out about 2 hours a day, just kind of write recipes and kind of flush my own ideas out. And he walks up to me and says, "Daddy, I got a great idea for soup." I'm like, "Oh, well, tell me about it." He goes, "It's called strawberry soup." I'm like, "Well, what's in the recipe?" He goes, "Well, what you do is you take a bowl and you take two scoops of ice cream and you take them out and you put them in a bowl and you let them melt." I'm like, that is genius. I love it. So that was like, Miles has got two recipes in the book. He's got a strawberry soup, which is basically melted ice cream, and I upped the recipe a little bit by putting some fresh strawberries back on top of it. And he also has a recipe called snowman soup, which is basically hot chocolate. And when the marshmallows start to melt, it looks like a snowman kind of melting in the soup as well. So, so he's my future recipe collaborator with that question.
Yeah, well, that strawberry soup, I mean, we'll be licking the plate clean.
That's
for
funny.
Sure.
It's so simple, it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
But there are some really very beautiful, very easy, sophisticated recipes in the book as well. That without a question, your family will want to lick the plate clean as well.
Yeah. In this cookbook and in your first cookbook, Real Kitchen, you feature flavors from all over the world. You love Chinese, Thai, Italian, Greek, Latin American, French. What was your introduction to the foods of other cultures?
I think food is the one sustenance that really kind of holds us together as humanity. And I think if you understand the food from another culture, I think you understand the culture a little clearer. So for me, to really truly understand what a sense of globalism is all about. And as a chef, I read everything I can get my hands on, and there are some amazing chefs and amazing culture and amazing food in Mexico and all through Latin America, and it's a definition. It's a food, and it's really beautiful to study and learn. Mexico gave chocolate to the world. It gave vanilla to the world, and it's such a culinary melting pot of so many different interesting chilies and tomatoes that came out of Latin America. And Italy, it's just such a marvelous, marvelous place, and it has cooking traditions that go back 2,000 years about, slow cooking things in clay pots until they just kind of melt and fall apart. So to kind of study human culture through food is something I've been doing my life, and I've never really kind of put it together of what I was actually doing. I was really interested in it. And then all of a sudden, once you get an opportunity to become a published author and given the opportunity to say something, we really had to kind of hone down exactly what my cooking style was. And then I started to put it together, and it was something I call Global Fresh, which is all about recipes and ideas that are very global, but they're also very doable. And by that, I mean recipes that you're already pretty much used to anyway. There's great recipes for Indian curries. In my first book, there's a recipe for lamb curry, which I think is the most beautiful. If you love good lamb curry, it's the most beautiful recipe because it's so simple to put together. And a homemade curry powder, which is just, four or five different dried spices ground together, toasted first and then ground together. It's so much more aromatic and fragrant than anything you'd ever buy in a store. It's just, and the flavors are just hypnotic. And then to truly understand what great French cooking is all about. And then I travel quite a bit. My passport is completely, filled. I think I need to get one of those little extension filler booklets to go along in it. But I've traveled a lot. I've been to the Far East, and I've been all through Mexico extensively, and been all through Europe. And I'm just kind of fascinated about food and culture and people. So when I came back from my last trip to Europe, shooting Tyler's Ultimate, we came back about a year and a half ago. And I just started to, basically dump my head out into a computer and sort of sort out the recipes and my idea of what, food is all about, because everything that I do influences everything that I do. And to really kind of come up with recipes that are just sort of classic, about defining the wheel of classic cooking versus trying to redefine it and concoct new crazy flavors that I think kind of puts you in line with a food style that will probably date itself. And I'm much more interested in timeless recipes that are just sort of like the wheel of what brilliant simple cooking is all about.
Yeah. Well, I guess your suitcase then goes with your passport, because you say in Eat This Book your suitcase is shredded.
Shredded. Absolutely shredded.
Tell us about maybe a person that you met on this last trip to Europe for Tyler's Ultimate that you thought, wow, this person.
Well, there was a lot of
really,
really great, great people. I met one guy. His name was Jean Leritier, and he was the president for Slow Food for France, president of Slow Food for France. And he was just an amazing, a history volume of information about French culture. And he lived in French Catalonia, which is almost the border between France and Spain. And he spoke this sort of pidgin French, which was sort of Spanish and sort of French. And he had a Muscat vineyard, Muscat, the wine itself, the dessert wine. It's a DOC, which means it could only, like champagne, it can only come from a very specific region. And he made the most beautiful muscat I've ever had in my entire life. And so we spent the afternoon at his villa, and we made a recipe that he had laminated from it was his grandfather's recipe written in and on a piece of paper in his grandfather's handwriting. They had laminated so it wouldn't be destroyed. And we made this recipe that was, you know, it was over 150 years old, and it was really, really fascinating. About how we went to this organic chicken farm, and we found these chickens that were really amazing, and they were fed organic tomatoes and melon, and then we put this recipe together with bitter oranges and rich tomatoes, and slow cooked the chicken until it just kind of fell apart. And it was such a fantastic afternoon, just to kind of meet people who have such a big important role in food itself on a global level. It was a really interesting afternoon to kind of hang out with them. And then also I went truffle hunting in Alba, which I thought was really fascinating as well. We met up with a truffle hunter. His name is Ezio, and his wife Kalela. They have a small little bed and breakfast in Alba, in Piemonte, which is like sort of the mountain region of Italy. And it was such an amazing afternoon. It was sort of early fall. I think it was in October, and we went truffle hunting at the crack of dawn. It was like 7:30 or 8 o'clock in the morning, and with his dog, and the dog's name was Jolie, and the dog was worth about $50,000 just for her nose alone. It was amazing, and we went truffling. And truffle, it's a really kind of a cutthroat business. You learn a lot about what the world of food is all about and where it comes from. Yeah. Artisanal producers, truffles. I live in New York City, and in my opinion, truffles come from Dean DeLuca, you know. But as far as like a truffle hunter, like this guy, the truffle hunters will actually poison and kill another truffle hunter's dog because the competition is so cutthroat. They only come up a certain time of the year, and either you're going to make money or I'm going to make money, but something's going to happen. So it was a really interesting story to kind of hang out with this guy. And we got up really super early one morning and went truffle hunting, and we unearthed like four truffles that are about the size of one was about the smallest one was about the size of a golf ball, and the largest one was about the size of a lemon. And once you smell that hypnotic smell of white truffle, and it has like a really kind of like sexy musky smell to it. It's almost like socks and sex. It's kind of like somewhere right in the middle, you know. And we packed up our white truffles, and I think we unearthed almost like $10,000 for the truffles in about 45 minutes. And we put them I had this big barber coat on, which still smells like truffle to this day. We went back to his bed and breakfast, and we fed a few of his friends, and I made this beautiful risotto out of porcini mushrooms, and then at the end of the show, Ezio walks in with his jacket, and he pulls out one of these white truffles, and he shaves half of it into this beautiful risotto that I made, and that was the show. And as a chef, I mean, I just have to pinch myself and then remind the camera crew that yes, we are getting paid today, but this yeah. This is such an amazing, just like this is it. I'm living a dream right now. So that was kind of my life for like 2 years. I traveled around shooting Tyler's Ultimate, and then when I got back, my book table of contents, the due date looming, I had to kind of get together, and I put together this table of contents with this food, and it's a style called Global Fresh, because I think food is so important everywhere else in the world, and I think we as American culture, we have a lot to learn. Because food is just different here, and in other parts of the world, it's like the important conversations of the day is like who has the best croissant in town, and I think we're picking that up slowly, and I think people want the good life. I think people want to make great, delicious food with their family and friends, and share great recipes and have a great time, and to be able to make things that they're proud of, and be able to pass on, cooking information from one generation to the next, and have your kids in the house and have the house smell great. I think people are really ready for that. So I put together a collection of recipes, and I think they're all really beautiful. They're all tested down to the absolute grain of salt. So I promise you, they all work. And it's just my new book called Eat This Book.
Yeah, and it begins with some basics. A couple of minutes ago, you were talking about this terrific lamb curry and the wonder of making your own, putting your own curry powder together. You want people to work from a foundation of flavor. You want to talk about that?
Well, I think for the most part, there's a basic understanding of cooking. Like, I think cooking should be intuitive, and I think that that's where a lot of my recipe writing really kind of, I think, really shines quite a bit, actually, because the recipes are written as if you and I were having a conversation together, and the recipes are all really sort of very simple and are really focused about on how to kind of strip down the recipe to its bare essentials so we really can make it taste great without really spending a lot of time with it. And that's where I take a lot of my global influences and translate them into recipes that actually make sense for you and actually turn into what you can make for dinner tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And the foundation of flavors are, you know, just like very simple. Simply, I like to, you know, I have a Braun, one of those little kitchen grinder things. You know, I'm sorry, one of those little coffee grinders. You know, that I think it costs about $8. And I have two. I have one for coffee, and I have one for cumin and whatever. Unless you like cumin in your coffee, and then you can have one. But if you don't, I like to have two. But then, you know, just to simply take some like hard spices and put them into a saute pan and dry toast them, and then put them into a spice grinder and pulse them down. And when you release what's called the essential oils of hard spices right there and there on the spot, the flavor is so much more pungent and so much more aromatic and delicious that you can even translate that idea to simply fresh ground pepper. It makes an enormous difference in the way your food tastes versus buying pepper that's already pre-ground, because again, you're releasing the essential oils of the spice right there on the spot, and it just tastes so much better. So the foundation of flavors, and you once you kind of dig through Eat This Book and you make recipe once or you make it twice, and all of a sudden you begin to develop an intuitive sense on how to make things taste great. Because the recipes are written very, very simply, and some of them pretty funny. And they're just written as if, you know, I'm sitting right beside you and I'm kind of giving you a play-by-play of what the recipe should look like halfway through the recipe and what the recipe should look like when you're done. And it was fun. I love writing.
Yeah. Do you think that your approach to writing a cookbook is gleaned from how Food 911 works?
Well, I learned a lot. You know, it's like I'm always kind of growing as a person and growing as you know, as a storyteller, and that's where, you know, I had to kind of downplay my experience working in restaurants, because it's all about, you know, things that you know, as a living, breathing kitchen that could take, you know, take 12 hours to put together, you know, dinner for 250 people, where it's, you know, and it's all about a machine and fresh this and fresh that. But, you know, in a kitchen, I understand, because I'm busy just like everybody else. I'm a father just like everybody else. And there's ways to really kind of cut down on things that are unnecessarily time-consuming, that really don't add that much more flavor to the dish. But if you really kind of focus on making a few ingredients really shine, you can have a delicious masterpiece. And shooting Food 911 for 5 years, I, you know, listened, you know, which is, I think, is really important, to listen to people and what they really want. They want recipes that they can make tomorrow night. They want food that doesn't cost an arm and a leg, and they want things that are going to make them look good. So with that in mind, I have to put every recipe I write to a filter. Does it meet the test? Can you make this in roughly an hour? Is it gorgeous? Is it easy? Does it only use 5 ingredients? So, you know, with that, you kind of develop the style itself. And all of a sudden you have this whole list of like this repertoire of recipes that hit it. They're just like practical. It's like, I can make this tomorrow night. I can do this. This is great. And then once you put a spoon in somebody else's mouth, that's where the big payoff comes from, because all of a sudden you make this thing that didn't really take you a lot, that looks sensational, but you're not going to tell anybody how easy it was to pull off.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so worth it to see that, you know, they see the dish and it's like ooh la la, and then they taste it and the eyes close.
and you're like yeah, this is so fantastic, delicious. I love that. You know, I was home last weekend, and because my life is a little different now, I travel quite a bit, but I was cooking like crazy this weekend. I had a business dinner at my house on Friday, and my apartment is in GQ this month. If anybody wants to check it out, it's on page 235. But then it's a really cool layout. But I had a business dinner at my house on Friday, and then I had some friends over on Saturday, and then I made leftovers on Sunday, and it was just so fun just to cook and kind of get in there. And I think it's so great. I love it.
Tyler Florence is our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn, and listeners, I welcome your telephone calls, questions, comments for our guest, Chef Tyler Florence. He is the host of a couple of popular cooking programs on cable television's Food Network, Food 9-1, and Tyler's Ultimate. He's the author of Eat This Book, Cooking with Global Fresh Flavors. That is his latest book. He is also the author of Tyler Florence's Real Kitchen. The number to dial if you're in the Champaign-Urbana area and would like to join the discussion this afternoon, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And let me mention that our guest will be in Chicago later this week on Friday. He will be at Borders Books and Music on that great street, State Street, at 12:30, May 13th.
That's right.
In Chicago.
That's going to be great. It's going to be a good event.
333-9455, 800-222-9455. You know, talk with us about the beautiful photograph on the back of the jacket. This looks so fabulous. Talk about easy.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's avocado. It's a salad of avocado, bacon, and watercress with a lemon vinaigrette and crunchy salt on top, and it is outrageous. I mean, bacon, in my opinion, is an honorary vegetable anyway. It's just so, it's one of the food groups. I love bacon. I chop it up in my cornflakes.
It's a pork fat thing, as Emeril would say.
Yeah, it's a pork fat thing.
Now, on this photograph, you can see the salt and the pepper. And, you know, we're seeing a number of coarse salts for sale now and a number of different kinds of peppercorns on the market. Can you offer us just a real quick lesson on salt and pepper?
In my opinion, natural salts taste better. Like the stuff in the blue box when it rains and pours, you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
That stuff, it's fortified with iodine, and I think it has a very metallic flavor to it. So it's, for me, I don't think it tastes very natural. And salt, it's either mined from the earth, right, or it comes from the ocean. And mined salt, like kosher salt, is mined, right? So they dig it up from the earth, and it's just sort of pure natural mineral salt. It tastes really great. Sea salt itself, everyone's heard of like gray sea salt from Brittany, or mm-hmm. Sicily has some really fabulous sea salt as well. And that salt is actually where they build levees. Around the ocean, around low tide areas, and they'll open up the levee and let the ocean water in, and they block off the levee, and then they push the ocean water into these big square areas and let the sun naturally dehydrate it. And once all the water is evaporated, what you're left with is salt, mineral salt, which tastes very oceany. So there's different kinds of salt. I love like really great sea salt. With cooking as well, because it has such a natural, delicious flavor to it. And it's not too overpowering and too strong. I just got a bag. A friend of mine just got back from Hawaii, and I got a bag of pink volcanic salt, which is good. I haven't really used it yet, but it looks cool on my shelf.
Let's talk with a listener. Caller in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hey, hi, Tyler.
Hi, how are you? What's your name?
My name's Julie. I'm not calling for any specific reason except for to say, love your show.
Thank you.
You're fabulous. I have learned so much and become such a better home chef, you know, due to great programs like Tyler's Ultimate and Food 911. And I just want to say thank you. And I just really enjoy watching you. I love your books. I'm constantly going on Food TV looking up recipes.
Okay.
And it's been great, so thank you so much for sharing your magic.
Oh, Julie, thank you very much. Appreciate it. If you guys go into fooddb.com, you can actually check out my apartment, which is really great. If you scroll halfway down the homepage, there's a little block that says, "Tyler, check out Tyler's pad." And you can check out my new apartment. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. Well, congratulations for all your success, and thanks again.
All right, Julie, thank you very much. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Let's talk with another listener, caller in Charleston, line four. Hi.
Hello?
Hello? Nope, I think something happened there.
That's okay.
Maybe they'll call back. 800-222-9455, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Also, you can hear the sounds of Tyler's neighborhood on Our if you go to our website, WILL.UIUC.EDU, you can link to the story that was on this weekend on Weekend Edition when NPR's Linda Wertheimer shopped and cooked with Tyler Florence in his downtown New York neighborhood.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a fun story. And, you know, the sounds of the place, was it took us there.
Well, that's so great, and that's what I love about radio, because you really kind of use your imagination, and it's not over-explained, but explains just enough where you kind of get the sense of chaos and the sense of hurry and the sense of that symphony of the city, as I like to call it, like the horns honking and all the chatter, and it's just, and I listened to it the other day, and it sounds crazy. I mean, it just sounds like, we went to one market called Dynasty Market, which is around the corner from my house, and it's really sort of the heart of Chinatown, and it's the biggest market there that really kind of supports the community, and it's so busy when you walk through there. It's so crowded. You almost have to fight your way to the counter, but they have the freshest fish in Chinatown, and they have the most beautiful, like, ground pork, and I mean, to make great dumplings out of, and really great vegetables, and they also have, pre-cooked items like delicious roasted pork and Peking duck, which has been dipped in honey and soy and roasted really slowly. It's a fabulous, fabulous place. Yeah. It's a little insane, but if you can get over that, it's great.
Yeah, it was funny when Linda said, "Why are we buying a duck?"
Well, yeah, cooked. Because I was like, you got to taste this. Like, why are we buying a duck? Because we're going to eat
so
it.
It's so good.
It's fantastic. This is good.
Yeah.
Just taste it. Yeah. So we grabbed a Peking duck, and then we walked right next door to a noodle factory that's been around since for 92 years. And they make these little really paper thin wonton sheets, and we watch the whole process going through, and how they hand cut each little stack, which is great. Mm. And then it's like the Cadillac of wontons, if that even exists. So we grabbed we got some udon noodles, which are thick, chewy noodles, and we also grabbed some wonton wrappers, and we went back to my apartment. And we made a couple dishes out of it, but that was a really fun afternoon.
Yeah. I hope everybody's had their lunch today.
Yeah.
Let's talk with our listener in Charleston is back with us on line 4. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, how are you? What's your name?
Norm.
Hey, Norm, how you doing, buddy?
Good. Say, I enjoy on Saturday mornings, I watch How to Boil Water.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, and I've tried a lot of the things you do on there, and I've never had a failure, I don't think. So
okay.
I just wanted to tell you I like that show, too, in addition to your other ones.
Yeah, great. How to Boil Water is a really good show, and it's really picking up a lot of steam, too. And a little Food Network history, it was the very first program on the Food Network, and it was Irma Lagasse's very first program. So they've passed the torch on to me.
Yeah, and, enjoy. You've been on it for a while, haven't you?
We just shot our third season. We wrapped it up in March.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, appreciate that.
Oh, well, thank you very much. You're welcome. You know, the great thing about How to Boil Water, which is on, it's a dual satellite feed, so it's all across the country at 10 o'clock on Saturdays and Sundays on the Food Network. And the great thing about the show, it's like really super practical 101 cooking. And it's all about, again, about dinner that you can make tomorrow night. So we use really good ingredients and put it through one or two cooking steps, and you get a masterpiece out of it. And that's what people want. They want to get the food on the table, and they want to do it in a stylish way. And that's what that show's all about.
Yeah. Did you have a question, line 4?
I would say the other thing that's good about it is that you use ingredients that we can find in our rural grocery stores.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's what, and again, it's just all about like I get it. You know, I get it loud and clear. I've been hanging out with the fans of the Food Network shooting Food 911 for 5 years. And when we write the recipes for the show, it's just we immediately put it through a filter. Can you get this? Can you make it? Can you do it in a timely fashion? And if it meets all those criteria, it makes the show. And other than that, we just have a good time. And studio is really kind of interesting, too, because I've been shooting on location with Food 911 and Tyler's Ultimate for 7 years now. And to get back in the studio and to kind of do that aspect of shooting television is really interesting for me.
Well, thanks a lot.
Thanks for the call.
Norm, thanks for calling, buddy. Take care.
Next, we go to Savoy, listener on line 1. Hi.
Hello.
Hello, how are you? What's your name?
Keith.
What's happening, Pete?
Have you ever heard of people being allergic to garlic and onion?
Well, you know what it is. Actually, garlic itself, if you take a garlic clove, right, and you slice it in half, and the stamen, right, which is the beginning of the flower, which is in the root of the garlic bulb itself, is actually quite toxic. And not toxic in a bad way that'll kill you. It's toxic in a way that'll give you indigestion. Right, so a lot of people once when they digest garlic, and you know, you get that sensation where you just kind of in a gross way kind of burping it up all night, and you know what I mean, right? A French chef a long time ago, I showed me a trick, and I think it's so genius. If you take the garlic clove in half, or take a garlic clove and slice it in half through the equator, not through the very middle of it, but through the elongated. If you lay it down flat, right, and take that little stamen out before you cook it, it'll you won't have one single problem with garlic at all.
That sounds hopeful. What's the correlation with onions?
With onions itself, you know, it's like it's onions itself. They contain quite a bit of sulfur, and I think a lot of people have a reaction to that. So other than that, if it's something your doctor says, you know, you are allergic to onions, you can't eat them. I have friends that are allergic to numerous things. So it's if it's something your doctor says, you're allergic to onions, and sometimes people are allergic to them in a raw state but not cooked. Mm. Yeah, because they do contain quite a bit of sulfur.
Any substitutes for cooking?
For onions? Wow, what's a good substitute for onions? Onions kind of like, you know, it's a staple of everything.
Leek, would it be?
Leek is a really good idea. Maybe shallot. You know, it's still an onion family, but it's definitely not an onion. Leeks might be a good idea. But then again, I think if you're allergic to one, you well may be allergic to another.
I think so.
I think so. Well, I hope that works out for you, Norm.
Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot. Take care.
Let's talk with another listener. Line 2, cell phone. Good afternoon.
Hi, Tyler. This is Bob. We really love you, my wife and I, and we just wanted to see if there's any new shows in the works.
Well, actually, you know, oddly enough, and this is kind of hot off the presses, but we are shooting a pilot for a brand new show on the Food Network, and probably out in January 06, but it's going to be called Thai Food, TYFOOD. But mm-hmm. Buts, and it's going to be brilliant, simple cooking out of my house. And as a matter of fact, I got a phone call from my assistant today in New York that the location scout came by my place and took a look at it. And so we'll probably shoot the pilot at the end of May, and we'll probably start shooting the series in September, and it'll probably be on the air sometime in January.
And all the other shows are still going to be continued on the air.
To not let anybody down, but we just kind of closed the curtain on Food 911 as a show itself, because they have, you know, when in cable, when they hit that magic number of shooting 300 plus shows, they have enough to air them for quite a while. So, and then what they'll do is they'll run, you know, season 1, then season 2, then season 3, and then season 4, and then season 5, and they'll run them again. And some of the shows have been on the air, you know, 15, 20 times. But they have enough of a block of shows that they can just kind of keep airing them for an indefinite life of the show itself. So we're not shooting Food 911 anymore. I know some people are probably kind of cringing right now, but
My wife wanted you to come to our house.
I'd love to, it's just we've done it all. I don't know, I don't know what else we could possibly shoot. I mean, you name it, from risotto to prime rib to lemon cream pie to you name it, we've covered it as a topic. So yeah. it's kind of like we're at the point, and I'm at the point in my career where we're just kind of sit back a little bit and kind of rethink it and come up with something that's kind of fresh and different and like the next thing. Because if you think about it, I mean, Food 911 was one of the like very first reality shows that was on television.
Mm-hmm.
And we just make great simple cooking. We laugh all day and we tape it, and so it's a fantastic show. And I would love to do it again. If they order more, I'll do it.
Yeah. Well, we love every show you have, and my wife is very envious of me getting to talk to you. So we appreciate your shows on the Food Network.
Hi, Bobby. Is your wife there? Put her on the phone.
No, I'm actually on the road heading back home, and I just picked it up on when I was surfing channels on the radio here, and I picked up your the show going on. So I called my wife and told her you were on, and she goes, "Oh, I wish I was down there."
All right, well, we'll tell your wife I said hi, Bob, okay? Well,
thank you very much.
Hi, Bobby. Thank you very much. All right, thanks for calling.
Take care.
Take care. And put two hands on the steering wheel, all right?
Yeah. Be careful out there. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Tyler Florence is our guest this afternoon here on the program. If you'd like to talk with Tyler, give us a call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Mario Batali shares your sentiments about cooking at home. You both believe you can make good food in the time it takes to run out for takeout. Would you give us a couple of ideas this afternoon, Tyler, for main dishes that we can get to the table in short order?
Well, there's a couple of recipes. I think everybody loves chicken, right? So there's a couple of recipes in there that use things you can definitely get your hands on. Like, I think prosciutto is relatively available now. It's usually at the deli counter, which is an Italian cured ham, which I think is just, you know, like food of the gods. It's really delicious. So there's a couple of recipes that use just sort of like table mushrooms, like button mushrooms, rosemary, and prosciutto, and roasted chicken, and you kind of finish it off with a little bit of Marsala wine, or you can use table regular red wine if you want, which translates really well in the recipe. And there's a bunch of recipes in there, and it almost kind of depends on if you like Celeste, do you like fresh corn and tomatoes, or do you like pumpkin and sage as a taste?
I like both of those things.
You like both of those things. Well, then, great, because there's a great chapter called Savoring, which is all about delicious cold-weather dishes. And there's also a great chapter on Tasting, which is all about tasting the sun. And it goes everything from, like, really kind of beautiful fresh tomato dishes to, like, grilled fish and the savoring chapter covers everything from pumpkin sage soup to delicious braised lamb shanks, which is basically, if you can master the art of making pot roast, you can make delicious lamb shanks.
Yeah, that Tasting chapter is wonderful.
Oh, yeah, Tasting, yeah, it's good. It's a beautiful chapter.
And I can't wait until our farmer's market starts up and we can get, you know, really nice produce. I'm kind of burned out on what I can get at the moment at the supermarket. But
yeah,
I am so looking forward to this idea that you have. I think it came from the Noshing chapter, actually. Grilled fig toast with prosciutto and green beans.
Oof, that is sensational. That is such a good recipe. When we put that together and taste it for the first time, because it's basically a fresh salad of haricot vert, which are small French green beans.
The little tender ones.
That you can use regular green beans if you want, fresh basil and prosciutto. And basically kind of like, so the green beans are blanched, which means they go into a pot of boiling salted water for like 3 minutes. And then you put them into a bowl of salted ice water for like just to shock them, just to stop the cooking process. But you heighten the color and you heighten the flavor and they're cooked. And then so you take them out, you dry them off a little bit, and then you put them into a bowl with hand shredded prosciutto and hand ripped up basil and just a little bit of olive oil and a little bit of fresh lemon juice. And then the figs are just very simply prepared and they're warm and you kind of put the whole thing together and it really tastes like summertime and it's a fantastic dish.
That sounds so wonderful.
It is absolutely delicious.
Growing up, I was lucky enough to have a number of friends of Italian ancestry and fresh figs were, oh, that was the best thing I ever discovered as a little
tyke. I think a fig is the sexiest fruit on the planet. Ugh. I really do. It is such a beautiful thing, and the flavors are so amazing. I love figs. Yeah. Figs wrapped in prosciutto and just kind of roasted in the oven.
Or put on the grill.
Put them on the grill. Fabulous. What I'd like to do as far as like an hors d'oeuvre, you take a fresh fig and make a little slit in the bottom and then take a small little cube of blue cheese and stuff it up inside the fig and then wrap it in prosciutto or wrap it in bacon or wrap it in pancetta, some sort of very thin pork delicious something or other, right? And you can either pop in the oven at super high temperature, like 450 degrees, for 7 to 10 minutes until the prosciutto starts to cook around the fig as sort of an outside skin. And then the figs kind of release their own sort of little juicy syrup. And once you bite into it, it's like a trifecta. It's like salt and then sugar and salt again on the inside. And it is sensational.
Let's talk with another listener, a caller in Mattoon, line 4. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, how are you? I'm sorry, what was your name again?
Linda.
Hi, Linda. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Awesome.
I'm a really big fan of how to boil water, and I really like Jack Corrigan. She's a really great personality and sort of represents those of us out here who do not know how to boil water.
Oh, great.
But I noticed at first when you took over the show from the French chef, she would be very involved in helping you, and then after a while, she just sat in one place and didn't move, and I was wondering whether
what
she were ill
Jack?
Or, pardon?
what's up with Jack? You know, it's so the great thing about the Food Network, they really listen to their viewers.
Uh-huh.
Like they really listen to them quite a bit. And when I took over, there were, first of all, no one likes change. So when I took the show over, there was actually initially a backlash because there was a small little group of fans that really liked, I can't remember the guy's name who hosted the show before me, but there was a group of fans that really liked him a lot. And they're like, well, we like Tyler, but, you know, what happened to the show? And then I took over, and it took about a season for Jack and I really to get into a groove with each other,
mm-hmm.
where we wouldn't talk over each other, and the food would really come out, and it was all about, you know, all about the process, and we had a brand new executive producer on the show too. So we came to it from like three different very green points of view on putting the show together, and then the second season we had listened to a lot of viewer feedback where they were like, well, we don't really like Jack chopping onions, and we don't really like to watch Jack do this, and then we thought, okay, for season two we'll just put Jack at a table, and I'll just cook, and then that way it's all about, you know, really great questions and really great cooking tips. And we thought, okay, that might really hit it as a formula for the show, because it's really hard to create a successful television show. And you have to hit a great formula to get the message across and get the information across. So we tried that for a season, and then we got this flood of emails saying, God, is Jack pregnant? Did she hurt her foot? Like, what happened? Like, what's up with Jack? And then so then we said, okay, so we'll put her back in the kitchen. So now, and Jack is the loveliest human being on the planet. He's a very good friend of mine. She and her son Spencer, when they come to New York City, we always have a big fun dinner together. And so on the third season, which we just cranked out, we just wrapped it up in March, she's back in the kitchen, and we're on fire. Like we're so in sync with each other now, and we just have a great time, and it's funny. And it's kind of irreverent, and the food's simple, and we just kind of laugh and just make great fun food. And I love the show, and what I do love about it is how much sense it makes, because again, it's all about practical, brilliant, simple cooking, using one or two ingredients, and putting them through one or two cooking steps, and it's food that you can make tomorrow night for dinner.
Right. Well, what I like about having Jack in there is that she says, "Oh yeah, I remember the right way to cut an onion, or I remember the right way that you taught me to do this."
Mm-hmm.
So it gives us a little bit of a review.
Sure.
And you really do work very well. I really enjoy the show, and I'll look forward to the new season. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, Linda. Okay. Fantastic.
And next we go to a listener in Urbana. Line one, hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Hi, what's your name?
Hi, Sylvia.
Sylvia, how you doing, baby?
Hey, great. I too adore you, and
I'm getting a lot of good feedback today. My head's going to swell.
Don't get a big head. Let's go a little further back in the history of How to Boil Water. There used to be a program called that, and it was some comedian and a chef, a female chef, mm-hmm. and she would just stand there in the background and tell him what to do. Do you remember that one?
I do remember that. So it was Emeril Lagasse's first show, uh-huh. and then it kind of dropped off the face of the planet, and he started doing The Essence of Emeril.
Yes.
And then they picked it up again, and this is when Food Network was a really junior cable company, and it only had, I think, maybe 6 or 7 hours of programming a day. And they had a second incarnation of How to Boil Water, where it was just that. It was a comedian and a female chef, and they would just cook and banter. Like, she would kind of point, like, slap him around and show him what to do, and he would make a joke about it. And they would,
he came up with a really great pasta fagioli recipe, and I use it all the time.
Oh, great. Fantastic.
And one of my favorites of yours is the sandwich with the portobello mushroom and flank steak, I think it was.
Oh, yeah, that was from Food Diamond 1. It was a couple seasons ago, but that's a great sandwich.
Oh, I made it
really
for a party, and everyone loved it.
Oh, great. Good. I'm always glad to hear a success story.
All your recipes are good.
Thank you. Fantastic. Thank
you very much. Well, thanks, and keep up the good work.
All right, Sylvia, thank you very much for calling.
Sure.
I appreciate it, okay?
Right,
have a great day.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. And we've got a question that's come in over the transom, so to speak, a quick one. What do you think about the difference between dry and sweet marsala?
Dry and sweet marsala. I like sweet marsala. I just think it tastes great. I don't think there's, you know, I don't think for the most part, if you use it in a recipe, I don't think you're going to have to add more of one or less of the other. I think it's a personal preference. If you like dry marsala, fantastic. If you like sweet marsala, that's great. It's a fortified Italian wine, and I think it's delicious. I mean, it's great. I don't think it really matters.
Yeah. Any ideas for using them?
You can cook with them. I mean, you can cook. Mm-hmm. You can make great cocktails with it. You can cook with it. Marsala is just delicious as something that you want as a background note in, say, a quick pan sauce. So let's just say that you're going to make the recipe out of the cookbook, which is just pan roasted chicken, rosemary, mushrooms, prosciutto, marsala, right? For example. So what you do is you take a whole chicken, you cut it up in 10 pieces, or have your butcher do it for you, which is pretty easy and seamless. And then you season the chicken pieces, which is a leg, a thigh, a wing, and I like to take the breast and cut it in half. So everything is pretty much the same size, so it all cooks at the same time, right? Season it very well with salt and pepper, a little bit of extra virgin olive oil. The chicken goes in the pan, skin side down, so it gets nice and crisp, right? Then flip it over on the other side, and then what I like to do is take the whole pan, chuck it into the oven, and it's something that we have been doing in restaurants for a very long time. It's called pan roasting. We start it on the stovetop, and you finish it in the oven, and that's how restaurants can crank out a lot of food because we free the stove up for the next dish,
yeah.
Right? And then it actually cooks in a lot less time, too, because it's more a well-rounded heating element than that hard cooking just from the stovetop, just from the burner in the eye.
Mm.
So then once the chicken is cooked all the way through, what I like to do is take it out and put it onto a plate and just let it rest for a couple minutes. And then we'll take the pan and then put it back on the stovetop, and it's got all those kind of delicious kind of cooked on brown bits in the bottom that you definitely don't want to throw out. You don't want to wash out because that's where a lot of flavor comes from. And what I like to do at that point is take a nice fresh rosemary sprig, throw it to the bottom of the pan just to kind of infuse all the delicious sort of chicken fat that's in the bottom. Also some julienne strips of fresh prosciutto, and then some button mushrooms that are just simply cut in half. You leave the stem on, give it a little brush, but in the pan it's rosemary, prosciutto, and mushrooms. Give them a little saute just until they start to pick up all that great color and that great flavor, and they start to caramelize. All right, and then when everything's nice and crisp, again, I'll take that out and just kind of pile it on top of the chicken, and then you have a really complex flavor in the bottom of the pan. I'll take a little bit of marsala wine at that point and deglaze the bottom of the pan and let all those natural juices start to pull up. Now, if you don't have marsala, you can totally translate that with red wine. Works really, really well. White wine works out really well as well. And it doesn't have to be the most expensive bottle, but you definitely want something that you're going to drink.
Yeah.
Right? And then so the marsala is really delicious. So I'll add the marsala, let the alcohol evaporate a little bit, and then I'll add some boxed organic chicken broth to that and just let it simmer down so you have a really kind of beautiful sauce. And then I'll take the sauce, swirl it around with a little dab of butter at the end so it has sort of a kind of a luxurious feel to it. When you put a spoon to your mouth, it really tastes great.
Mm.
A little salt, a little pepper, and then maybe a shower of fresh parsley at the end. Swirl around and then dump it straight over top of the chicken, the mushrooms, and everything, and dinner's ready to go. And it's great with, like, you know, a simple vegetable. It could be like green beans and almonds, or it could be simple with even with like creamy mashed potatoes, and you got a hit.
Eat this radio.
Eat this.
Eat this book is Tyler Florence's latest book. Catch him on the Food Network. Florence, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Happy trails.
Thank you very much. I'm in Minneapolis right now. We're heading off to Chicago. And I'm going to Australia, and we got a big year coming up. Going to Australia, going to France this year. It's going to be big, and I just want to thank everybody, all the Food Network fans, because I would not be where I am today without them, and I just want to thank you very much. Check out this book. It's hot.
Okay, take care.
Love you. Bye.
Tyler Florence, our guest this afternoon. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Let's find out now what happened today on the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Man, I'm hungry. That sounded good. I watch a lot of Food Network at home, so does the wife. I try to cook that well, but I don't usually pull it off. The three kids are usually in a lot bigger hurry than that. Anyway, let's take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade, where the food gets traded and the farmers are priced. March futures in the wheat pit, soft red winter wheat, 312 the high for the day, the low at 306. The settlement price there down 6.5 cents. It's raining at the Chicago Board of Trade. That's really what most of the trade is talking about on the floor, and that pushed the market price lower for corn and soybeans and wheat today. The wheat taking the heaviest losses, down 6.5 cents in that nearby May contract. July futures off 7.75, the settlement price there at 313.75. It's your harvest month with a high of 319.75, the low at $3.13.25. September futures now 328.5, the high, the low at 322.25, settlement price 322.75. They were off 8.5. In December futures, 338.5, the high, the low at 332.5, settled 332.75, down 7. March contract, 347, high, low at 341.5, settled 341.5, off 8.5. And the corn pit looked like this for the day, down 2 cents in the nearby May contract, 198.25, the settlement price, 197.75, the low, the high up at $2 even for the day for the May corn. July futures, 207.25 on the high, the low at 5.75, settled $2.06. They were off penny and 3/4, and the Septembers were down 1.5 for the day with a high of 15.5, a low at 14, and a settlement price at $2.14.75 for the September. December contract now $2.24.75, the high, the low at 223.5. Settlement price there $2.24.25 a bushel. They were off a penny and a half for the day. March contract 232.5, high, low at 231.5, settled 232.25, down 1.5 in the May futures. 237, the high, the low at $2.36.25, settled 236.5, off 1.5. From the oat pit, the nearby May contract 127.25, the high. The low and settlement price both at $1.27 even. They were down 4 cents for the day. July futures $1.33.5, the high, the low at 132. Settlement there at 132.25, down 1 for the day. From the soy complex, nearby May bean, 632, the high, the low at 623, settled 628. They were down 0.25. And July futures a 638 high, low at 628, settled 633, down 1. August futures in the bean pit, 637, the high, the low at $6.28, settled 633, off 1. And the September's 633, the high, the low at $6.25, settled 628.25, down 1.25. November beans for the day, 630.5, the high, the low at 623, settled 627.5, down 1.5. And the January's 631.5, the high, the low at 25.5, a settlement price at $6.29. They were down 1.5 for the day. March contract down 1.632, the high, the low at 25, and a settlement price at $6.29 even for the March soybeans 2006 contract. Now the May bean meal from the products, 196.80, the high, the low at 192.80, settlement price at 196.60. They were up 2.10. July bean meal up 110, 194.60 the settlement price with a high of 194.90 and a low at 191.20. May bean oil 23.07, the high, the low at 22.85, settlement price at 22.91. They were off 31, and July oil down 20 for the day, 23.25, the high, the low at 22.98, settled there at 23.06. Now here's Celeste with the numbers from the Merck.
Okay, here we go. May feeders 111.60, the high, the low 111 even, the settlement 111.57.5, up 22.5. August 111.50, the high 110.60, the low, the settlement 111.37.5, up 55. September 110.30, the high, the low 109.40, the settlement 110.20, that up 32.5. June live cattle 86.67.5, the high 85.97.5, the low, the settlement 86.45, up 35. August 86.40, the high 85.70, the low, the settlement 86.32.5, that up 27.5. May lean hog 76.95, the high 76.15, the low 76.80, the settlement, that up a nickel. June 77.30, the high 75.25, the low 76.22.5, the settlement, that up 92.5. July 76.70, the high 75.20, the low 76.42.5, the settlement, that up 135. August 75.35, the high 73.75, the low 75.27.5, the settlement, that up 132.5. May bellies 82.67.5, the high, the low 80.25, the settlement 82.42.5, that up 165. The Dow is up 19 points, the NASDAQ up 8.